from the security vulnerabilities that we found, where I was able to get into a camera without a password, and I was able to delete footage, I was able to replace footage. How is that usable in court? How can Flock prove? I know that their system can't, that at least from the cameras that I've gotten into, and that John Gaines have gotten into, I know that they can't prove or can't figure out if it's been, if somebody's been hacking it or not.
I am recording this introduction from a hotel near Memphis, Tennessee. Last night, I held my first Brushfires of Freedom tour stop on my 19-city tour across 16 Western states. Over the next week, I will be speaking at these free, live events, so if you live in the area, please come out and join me. Last week, when I was in Georgia, I sat down with fellow YouTuber and privacy advocate Ben Jordan, and we had a great conversation. I will play that conversation for you in just a moment. But first, if you want to support my work creating educational videos and fanning the flames of freedom through my live, free speaking events that I'm holding around the country, I invite you to buy me a coffee or join my Patreon. Now, on to the video. Welcome to Business Reform. I am Dr. John Padfield, an engineer turned state representative turned business professor. And joining me today is Ben Jordan from the Ben Jordan YouTube channel.
Hello.
Ben, you have you were one of the first YouTubers to start making videos about Flock, and I watched all of them. Your first video that I saw was, I think it was called We Hacked 80,000 Flock Cameras in a Couple of Hours. But that has millions of views on it. I've talked to so many people who have watched that video. And I was just wondering if you could talk to me and my audience about what has happened since you have made these videos.
Sure, yeah. The first video I made was just kind of about Flock in general. Like, it was kind of about the business model and very opinionated. But it was also explaining like what the cameras do, what their mm-hmm. function is, and then some problems that have risen as a result. And while I was doing that video, I started looking into the security a little bit deeper, and that's when I found a lot of John Gaines research and some Joshua Michaels research, and then did some of my own as well. And in the first video also, I did like an adversarial noise attack that could block the plates so AI couldn't see them, but human eyes could, or, you know, a cop looking at a camera could see the plates, but AI couldn't read them. Yeah, and so then the third and last Flock video that I did was when I found a bunch of open cameras that I could view 30 days of retention around the country without needing a password. So it was kind of all those. I mean, since then, it's been pretty crazy. Like, it seems like every city that's voting on Flock has people asking me to come speak to the city council, but it's a little like having a YouTuber come to your city that doesn't live in the city. Just, I'm not sure how effective that is. I've worked with a lot of politicians, a lot of police officers and law enforcement agencies have reached out with questions, not only about the security, but just some of them are actually reaching out almost philosophically, like, you know, how much is this helping us really? How can we navigate everything that's going on to do what's best for our citizens? Like, there's a lot of police departments that actually are very well-meaning and are having second thoughts about using connected networks of ALPRs like Flock Safety or Axon. And then, yeah, it's kind of exploded on the internet, right? Or it's been a big deal. It's on the nightly news constantly. I'm constantly doing those little short nightly news interviews saying the same thing over and over again. But yeah, I mean, personally, I'm sick of it, right? Like, personally, I would love to be doing anything else, but it's so important right now to before these pop up in every single city around America, I think it's very important to highlight the actual pros and cons, and more so now get to the bottom of the efficacy claims and find out, you know, what crimes are actually being reduced, not solved where somebody's being put in prison, but what crimes are actually being reduced when you spend a ton of taxpayer money on something like ALPRs in general, versus spending it on community policing or increasing wage and benefits for existing police or increasing their training and mm-hmm. things like this. And so when doing this, I've just seen a very large exploding industry of police technology that are just very happy to get as much taxpayer money as possible.
I think that's a really important point to make. I have started trying to answer that question about just how much positive impact do we get from all of this surveillance gear. When you go on Flock's website, they make it sound like it's an open and shut case. Garrett Langley has made definitive statements. We know cameras reduce crime, or I believe he actually used the word cameras prevent crime.
Yeah.
And I've started digging into the data. I have not finished my analysis, but I went to the FBI's Uniform Crime Report looking at Atlanta and then the 10 next biggest cities and the 10 next smallest cities. Atlanta is the 36th biggest city in the country.
Yeah.
And when I start looking at FBI Uniform Crime Report breaks it down crime by crime. So I started with homicide and compared the 20 nearest size cities to Atlanta. What is their homicide rate? Atlanta is 30% higher. Mm-hmm. And that is an average over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Atlanta has been the most surveilled city since 2019. And so when you're 30% higher homicide rate and the most surveilled city, that casts doubt on the claims about just how effective they are. The other thing that surprised me, I've heard some people say, well, they may not prevent the crime, but at least they help solve the crime. We can figure out who did it. And I'm not finding evidence for that either. When I compare the average closure rate, meaning somebody's either arrested or they determined who it is, but they're either deceased or they fled the country. What is the closure rate for homicide in Atlanta versus the average of the 20 nearest sized cities? The closure rate is lower in Atlanta in spite of 60,000 networked cameras going into a real-time crime center.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that in Asheville, North Carolina. I saw, I was in Asheville talking to people about, you know, doing an event there and then talking to some politicians. And randomly, I hadn't even looked at the closure rate. And it had, yeah, the closure rate had gone down by, I think, a third since they had invested all this mm-hmm. money in the surveillance infrastructure. And I think there might, the problem with looking at any sort of crime data is just sociology and criminology are incredibly chaotic and complicated. And so when Flock says we reduce crime, I'm shaking my head and I'm just like, you won't know that for 40 years. Mm-hmm. Like to know that, to actually be confidently know that, you won't know, because we don't even know if increasing police reduces crime. Like we haven't figured that out as a society yet. The only thing that evidence and sociology research has proven, or has strongly suggested at least, is that community policing reduces crime.
Yes.
And community policing, an interesting thing about that is that it really is surveillance. When you are, if you have a city block in like South Chicago or something, and they like the police and they talk to the police about everything, they're going to tell you that somebody is, they saw somebody with a gun who may be in a gang, and then the cops can go investigate that and get information. They'll tell you that, what car and license plate drove down the street when a shooting happened. They'll do the job that Flock cameras are attempting to do because they want to save a community and they trust law enforcement. But when you have cities showing up to these city council meetings and saying, we don't want surveillance everywhere, we don't want to be tracked, and then the police and the city says, no, well, you're going to get it anyway. Like, what is that? That's breaking a social contract. Like that to me, that's actually going to make crime worse because you're going to have less people wanting to work with the police in any regard.
I think that's an excellent point. I am a big advocate for the community policing. I'm not anti-police.
Yeah.
But it needs to be a partnership, a cooperation. And one of the things that strikes me, I agree completely, we don't know that cameras are doing any good. And I'm being very careful in my wording, saying I have not found evidence. That's different than saying they don't work.
Yeah.
I'm willing to admit, like you said, it's a very complex issue. The reason I started focusing on homicide is homicides are pretty black and white. Either a person's dead or they're not.
Right.
When you get into something like domestic abuse, so many instances go unreported. Some sexual assaults go unreported. And so if you see a decrease in the numbers, did the actual incidents go down or did the reporting just go down? And we don't know.
If you look at the audit logs, like if Flock and Axon and all these services, if they're effective at criminals being arrested for the crimes they committed, it's overwhelmingly things like car theft, somebody stealing something from a grocery store and they have an ALPR in the parking lot, and then that gets put on the police hot list and they get, you know, popped three blocks down, something like that. It's crime, like the thing that bothers me so much about it is it's always crimes that have solutions. Like that there's easy solutions to prevent them from happening. Like if somebody's stealing food from a grocery store, pretty easy solution. You just need to make a bridge to social services with that program, or you know, put taxpayer money into social services that would help them not have to rob a grocery store to get food. In the cases of car theft, it's sort of the same thing. Like that, those are like addiction problems. Those are young children, like teenagers, behavioral problems. So, and these are all like plights on our life as citizens. But there's ways to actually prevent them from happening, whereas Flock is more geared towards just spanking the person who did it, which doesn't help me as a citizen that much. It just increases the amount of money I have to pay in taxes and decreases the amount of money that would go to things that would actually make communities better to live in general, as well as safer.
I made a video a couple of months ago about crotch cams. These are cameras that are over the road. They look down through your windshield as you drive under them to see if you have a cell phone on your lap. And what really struck me about that, the company promoting these, they published a study that said from the time these went into effect in a trial, I believe the trial was in North Carolina, but they compared the 3 months before to the 3 months after. They did not say one word about how many accidents were reduced.
Oh, of course.
But they talked about tickets went up 9x.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, this is not about public safety. This is about revenue generation, because you're bragging about we wrote nine times as many tickets. You didn't say a word about how many accidents were reduced.
Yeah, I mean, in this industry especially, there's a lot of studies and white papers. And if for some reason, a lot of this industry seems to write white papers, even though they're not involved in any science whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They're not involved in writing papers. They're not peer reviewed. Like it, generally, like the paper that Flock always points to was written by Flock employees. Their names and Flock email addresses are on the paper. And then the only person who wasn't a Flock employee, I think he was with some university in Texas, that person actually came forward and said, "Yo, this data is not good. Like I don't actually want my name on it." The fact that we are looking at studies conducted by companies that are for profit, like, should just be one of those common sense things. Like, that's something that I've been saying to so many city councils and stuff like that. When I talk to them, is like, Flock is a $7 billion company, give or take however many billion between today and the last time I looked at the number. They want to make as much money as possible. That's their that's a reason for their existence. They're incorporated, right? But I own a company. I understand.
They're not a 503.
Right. Yeah. I understand why businesses exist, and it's okay that they exist. But in this case, where it's becoming a government service that your tax dollars are paying for, that gets a little bit skewed. And so, sort of, when it's looked at in that regard, and then I say, okay, now, from my perspective, I've spent six figures trying to get to the bottom of these things and trying to do journalism on this stuff. And I'm not making that back because I don't have a business that makes money off of nobody's paying me to do this research. I'm doing it because I'm sick of seeing these cameras everywhere. And the people who are subscribed to my platform are really upset about them. And so I think that's like, I always try and start the conversation there, because it's like, when you're ever going to bring up research, you have to at least understand the motive of the research. It doesn't even matter who's doing it, but you have to understand what the motive is. And in the abstract, or in any part of that research, it doesn't even really bother telling you that there's a lot of motive to, you know, Flock isn't going to publish or self-publish a paper that says that their license plate readers don't work. Like, they would never do that.
There have been academic studies looking at the source of research versus the conclusions of the research. And it is so lopsided. It's virtually 100% of the research is in favor of the organization that paid for the research. It's almost a given that that's what's going to happen.
In science, we have this thing called the reproducibility crisis, or replication crisis, where it's always some crazy number, like 80% of scientific papers can't be reproduced. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like there's this big foundational problem in truth. Like, we're running in this issue like, oh my God, so much of this is fake. When the reality is that an oil company will pay $1 million for to prove that a certain shale is safe or something like that. And I'm not going to go there and do that same one because A, I don't have $1 million to do it. And B, I have no interest in that. And like, I'm not financially interested in making it. But that's a huge problem in science, is that so much research. If somebody wants to say something like, hey, that Flock paper doesn't really check out, they have to fund it themselves, or they have to get a university to fund it. That, you know, if I went to Georgia Tech and said, hey, will you help me make this video about that? They would say, well, Garrett Langley, the CEO of Flock, is actually on our board of, he's on their investment board or whatever. And so they would tell me to go get Flocked, I guess. But yeah, I mean, that's that is like a problem in general that stems outside of this that, I you know, more people should know about.
I have graduate students. I've mentored and been the dissertation chair for several doctoral students. And we have this conversation very early in their doctoral journey. When I see a proposal, I want to do a study to prove blah, blah, blah. And I stop them right there. That's not, you got a flawed premise if you want to do a study to prove something.
Yeah.
We're there to find the truth, and the truth may support this. The truth may contradict this, but we don't start a study to prove something.
Yeah. That's something I always keep in my head too, is even if I'm not writing anything down, if I'm just playing around with computer program or a microscope or whatever it is, whatever I'm doing, if I'm disappointed by a result, if I'm thinking like, oh, I hope this doesn't happen, then I need to take a break. I need to stop. I need to come at it from a different way, because like, science is always rewarding, because even if you don't find anything, you still found something because you tried something and didn't find anything, if that makes sense. Like, and so like, one example I always like to use is that if I made a coffee that could cure some form of disease, if it could cure psoriasis, if I made a type of coffee that could cure psoriasis and you drink it with 80% of people, and then a study in Japan does that same study and they find out that that actually doesn't happen. Like, I'm not upset about that, because we just actually zeroed in what was going on. So we could either refine the thing that was curing the psoriasis, or we could find out that it was some fluke caused by something else. It always opens up a new pathway. And so it is discouraging to see how much research out there, especially when it's done by companies, is like, we need some research showing that these cameras work. Yeah. Go make some.
It's kind of exactly.
Yeah. But in the Flock case, what they did was they just compared the numbers from COVID era to now, where crime nationwide went down. And so they happen to have a lot more cameras installed in that period. And so they take credit for bringing crime down by 30% or whatever it was. But I mean, that's nationwide in the FBI statistics. It's whether you had Flock in your city or not.
That's what I frequently hear people referring to as the rooster taking credit for the sun rising.
Yes.
We cherry pick our start point. We cherry pick our finish point. Hey, look, the numbers came down. We're taking credit for it.
Well, one thing that, first of all, I'm always wondering, and I've asked many police officers this, like, do you ever get mad that Flock's just more or less taking credit for that? They're saying, you know, we helped solve this crime, when really they supplied a license plate that was part of a 6-month investigation. And they were such a small part of it that you could have thrown that away and it still would have been a prosecutable case. Or the other thing, it's so hard to describe, but like, I think about, like, from the security vulnerabilities that we found, where I was able to get into a camera without a password, and I was able to delete footage, I was able to replace footage. How is that usable in court? How can Flock prove? I know that their system can't, that at least from the cameras that I've gotten into and that John Gaines have gotten into, I know that they can't prove or can't figure out if somebody's been hacking it or not, or if somebody's been going around in the file system. And so how could that possibly be used as evidence? Like, even a day one defense attorney could just say, can you prove that this evidence wasn't tampered with? And you can't. And so
the thing that really struck me, Jason Hunyar published a Substack article probably been a couple of weeks ago, but it was about the opt-out of flock cameras. And this was a letter written by Garrett Langley to a sheriff's department. And in the letter, Garrett Langley said, for ethical and privacy reasons, there is an opt-out list so that flock won't record the license plate.
Yes.
And I thought, whoa.
Yeah.
So if someone puts a license plate on the safe list and flock cameras ignore it, and now we're looking for a suspect, however many cars are on that safe list may have been there and we wouldn't have record of it. So
right.
To me, it's like if you want to use this for police work, there shouldn't be a safe list.
It's
like saying we're not even going to consider that these people might have done something illegal. We're just going to focus on you.
I mean, if we were to keep this type of system around, which I'm not an advocate for, but if we were to, I would actually prefer that everybody, except for people who are suspected of crimes or people who have a warrant out to search, to track them, I would prefer that everybody was on that safe list. Mm-hmm. And then the ones who weren't, the actual license plate data that was being tagged constantly, and the footage from the cameras. Like, I think if you're going to have them, they should be public. They should be available to the public. And I think that we would have a lot less of them if they did that. People would say, okay, I realize that this camera pointed at this swing set in this park is a little insane because anybody could view it, rather than only the police and flock employees being able to view it. I think that would make the conversation a little bit more productive. Washington State sort of did this, where they argued that all ALPR, government ALPR data, whether it's going through flock or whoever, should be public information. Mm-hmm. And people kind of freaked out. And then cities started getting rid of the system because it was too invasive.
Yeah. Well, Ben, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Look forward to doing it again sometime. But
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah.